Effectual Data Creation Facility Production.
Welcome to the OFNT Podcast, episode 256, which I'm calling Missing and Ugly iPhones. Despite predictions from respected Apple leakers, we didn't see the iPhone SE 4 last week. What we did see were renders of the iPhone 17, which looked horrible. The renders resembled incomplete Pixel phones. Well, I pray that these are not what the new iPhones will look like. Anyway, my neck of the woods is bracing for another polar vortex late next week, which I'm not looking forward to.
No.
Well, how would you feel about me getting this shoe on the road now?
Oh, oh yes.
Yeah. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Tech news. Well, there's good news if you're a user of TikTok in the good old USA, as the app is now freely available on Apple's App Store and Google's Play Store once again.
Yay!
This according to AndroidAuthority.com, as well as many other tech news outlets. This is especially good news for iOS users, as Android users could always sideload the app onto their phones. So I guess congratulations are in order for users of TikTok and app owner ByteDance. Let the good times roll! You know, there's another solution for app users and developers that face this cancellation problem. It's called Progressive Web Apps. Look it up on the search engine of your choice. Another article from AndroidAuthority.com is reporting that a recent update of the Google TV streamer has deleted options for the Dolby True HD and DTS HD Master Audio.
Huh?
It turns out Google never claimed this box was compatible with these audio formats, but because they were listed within the options, many assumed the streaming box eventually would. I guess this update dashed those hopes. I've never heard of these audio formats before, but I did check if my Apple streaming boxes were compatible with them, and I found that they were not. From the ever-popular, well, at least within this particular news section, AndroidAuthority.com, has an article which says Google might turn your idle Google TV streamer stream into a live news hub.
What?
Wow.
The site makes this statement based on an APK teardown of the Google Ambient Mode app. I think this is a great idea, and I wish Apple would do something like this for their streaming boxes. I mean, right now, my TV boxes have animated Snoopy and Woodstock screensavers when the screen is idle. Now, I have nothing against the Peanuts characters, but I would rather have breaking news stories instead. But hey, that's just me.
Yes.
Would you like to have the option of your streaming box's screensaver having a live news feed? And now a story not from AndroidAuthority.com. 9to5Google.com reports that the OnePlus Mini smartphone will launch as the OnePlus 13T this April. I realize that OnePlus has nothing to do with the old Carl Pei OnePlus, but this particular phone will be one of the few models in a smaller form factor. Well, the 13T will have a 6.3-inch display size. Geez, I guess that's considered small these days. And a 50-megapixel main shooter. The hopefully imminent release of the iPhone SE 4, there's basically no small form factor smartphone on the market anymore. By small, I mean a screen size of less than 6 inches. The current iPhone SE 3 has but a 4.7-inch display and is, or should I say was, the last smartphone on the market for those that prefer a compact phone. Bummer. Though we didn't see the iPhone SE 4 release last week as predicted, we did see the release of the Beats Power Beats Pro 2 earbuds. We, or at least I, also learned that the original Power Beats Pro are the best-selling earbuds ever.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, who knew? This model hasn't been updated since 2019, though.
Whoa!
So this is a big update for sure. The new Power Beats are a bit smaller than the massive original model, which makes them able to fit into a smaller case. While still massive compared to other models of earbuds, the new model is more refined, so they say. Weight of the earbuds is down 20% compared to the old models. Unlike the original Powerbeats, the new version has an Apple Silicon H2 chip, which brings active noise cancellation and transparency mode along with it. The H2 also gives the Powerbeats Pro adaptive EQ, personal spatial audio with head tracking, and lossless audio. Features I've been enjoying with my AirPods Pro 2nd generation. If you're using an Android phone, well, you'll have to download the Beats app to take advantage of all the new features, though.
Oh, no.
Why?
Well, I don't know, but it's better than nothing, I guess. The biggest new feature of the Powerbeats Pro 2 is the ability to track your heart rate. However, you'll have to be exercising and use a third-party app while doing so in order to use this feature. Well, it's early days for this, so perhaps in the future this will work with both Apple and Google Health apps. Oh, the Pro 2s also have Find My and Find My Device capabilities. The Powerbeats Pro will set you back some $250. Yeah, they're not cheap. I'm the owner of the original Powerbeats Pro, which were groundbreaking some 5 years ago, but I didn't like having those giant ear hooks looped around my ears.
No.
When the Beats Fit Pros came out in 2021, I ditched the Powerbeats Pro. The Fits, besides being smaller and more comfortable than the Powerbeats, have automatic noise cancellation and Find My included. If the next generation of the Beats Fit Pro has the heart rate feature and can be used with the Peloton app for tracking, well, I'll be picking them up for sure. And speaking of earbuds, this fall should see the release of the Apple AirPods Pro version 3. 9to5 Mac predicts that the new models will have the new H3 chip in them. Now, what new features will the H3 be bringing?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, neither does the author of the article. The article also predicts version 3 of the Pros will get a new design. Now, what will this design look like?
I don't know.
Again, neither does the author of the article. The final prediction for the new AirPods Pro is better noise cancellation, which is, of course, always welcome. As a wild card, the author predicts that heart rate monitoring and temperature sensing, and no, I don't know what that temperature sensing would be used for, but if, like the aforementioned Powerbeats Pro, the heart rate will only work on third-party apps, well, who cares? And then again, I guess those that use third-party apps would care, wouldn't they?
Yes.
I'll most likely be buying the new AirPods Pro 3s when they come out and hand my version 2s over to my wife, who'll use them more than I ever did. According to 9to5mac.com, the Apple TV Plus app is available for Android users.
Yay!
An Apple TV Plus app is already available for Android-powered streaming boxes, but this is the first time the app is available for Android phones and tablets. Well, if you've never used Apple TV Plus before, let me just say, once you get through the back catalog of movies and shows, there isn't much to the service. If you're into MLS, and that's Major League Soccer, or football as it's properly called outside the U.S.,
yes,
and enjoy watching a game of Major League Baseball on Friday nights, you just may like Apple TV Plus. Where's the iPhone SE4 that was supposed to be released last Wednesday?
I don't know, mate.
And I'm talking to you, Mr. Gurman. Gurman, who's labeled as a top-notch Apple leaker, went on to say that the SE4 would be released this Wednesday, the 19th, instead of last Wednesday. He also said that Apple will have a small announcement on last Thursday that never happened. He's 0 for 2 as of this recording. Since these two swings and misses, none other than Tim Cook, also known as Tim Apple, has stated that there'll be an announcement next week about a new member of the Apple hardware family. Will this be the iPhone SE4? At this point, your guess is as good as mine. It could be the M4 MacBook Air, or perhaps the M3 iPad Air, or will it be the base model iPad 11? Or could it be all of these products and maybe one that Mr. Gurman doesn't know about? We'll just have to wait and see what happens next week, I guess. Experts like Mr. Gurman have been predicting an OLED-screened MacBook Air being released real soon now, but a recent report from an unknown supply chain source, quo, puts a damper on that as they have reason to believe this OLED model has been pushed back until 2029.
Aww.
However, if you must have an Apple MacBook equipped with an OLED display, you can opt for an expensive MacBook Pro, which is supposed to be coming out in 2026. What? You say you don't need a MacBook Pro but would like an improved non-OLED screen on a MacBook Air? Well, Apple has you covered. But you'll have to wait a couple of years, 2027 to be exact. This unknown supply chain source, Quo, claims that the MacBook Air will move to an improved LCD panel using Oxide TFT technology by then. This new tech will bring faster scrolling.
Yay!
And improve power efficiency. The reasons for this delay were first thought to be due to the production costs of OLED displays, but it's also believed that the OLED iPad Pro failed to prompt the strong upgrade cycle that Apple expected to come with the OLED screen upgrade. So in other words, Apple is in no hurry to upgrade the MacBook Air screen to OLED, so this means I won't be upgrading or have any reason to upgrade my MacBook Air until 2029. New improved renders of the upcoming iPhone 17 and 17 Slim or Air or whatever they're going to call it are floating around the old intertubes. All show a camera island a la the Pixel phones, except uglier. Much uglier. The Slim iPhone 17 renders show one camera, a microphone hole, and a flash on the left side of this island, with nothing else but blank space on the rest of it. Another render shown on the Front Page Tech YouTube channel, better known as FPT, showed a similar render with two cameras, a mic hole, and flash, mounted towards the left of the island with a little less wasted space on the rest of it. This would be the regular iPhone 17, I gather, or perhaps the iPhone 17 Pro. At this point, who knows? I hope that wasted space will have a screen or something, anything mounted on it. If it doesn't, this will be the ugliest iPhone ever. I can understand the island being needed due to the thinness of this iPhone Slim or Air model, but why does said island have to take up nearly the whole width of the phone? As for the regular iPhone, why bother having an island of any kind at all? If true, I recommend Tim Apple bring back Johnny Ives from whatever he's doing these days, even if Apple has to buy his company in order to do so. Tech I'm using. Well, there's nothing on the near horizon for this old fart. Well, as far as new tech goes. I was considering a new tricked-out Mac Mini Pro, but there's nothing wrong with my humble, normal-equipped M2 base model. So why upgrade? It handles all my computing needs and will for the foreseeable future. In a couple of months, I will be in the market for a new iPad, though. The only thing that bothers me about my current 11-inch M2 chip MacBook Pro is the battery life. As I've said before, I'm lucky to get a full day out of it, and that's with just light usage. I would also like having a larger screen this time around. I might go with a 12-inch iPad Pro, but I'll probably wait and see what Apple brings to the new 12-inch iPad Air before making that decision. I did purchase a set of 4 Apple AirTags, though, and that's because my lovely wife is ticking to the sky in order to visit her family, so I planted a couple of them into her luggage. I've been using an AirTag in my car, but last week my iPhone informed me that the battery was low. A trip to Walmart for a replacement CR2032 battery remedied that. I was also thinking about getting a Rodecaster Duo to replace my Lewitt Connect 6 audio interface, but again, why replace something that's not giving me any problems? Besides Bluetooth connectivity and cool lighting, the Duo wouldn't really bring many new features or help streamline my workflow. In fact, the opposite could be said about the Rode unit. The Connect 6 is as simple as it gets, truly plug and play. The Rode Duo would take time to set up and use, so what I'm trying to say here is I'm on a sort of new tech moratorium right now. What can you do? An article from 9to5mac.com under the site's Apple at Work section suggests that Apple could and should enter the cloud-based business productivity app suite market.
Huh?
The author of the article admits that Apple can't compete with Google Workspace or Microsoft 365, both of which dominate the current market space, but could offer a more simplistic and easy-to-manage alternative. Well, I agree with this, but with some caveats. Would Apple want to scale up its server capacity for the sharp increase of email, documents, and conference calls that would occur once such a product was released? A dedicated customer service unit for business clients would have to be stood up also. Apple has the resources, but why should the company bother entering this market? Others have tried but haven't really made a dent in the market share that Google and Microsoft have in this sector. For example, privacy-conscious company Proton has attempted to enter this space with the release of a suite of apps last year. I jumped aboard with a subscription, but honestly, I don't even use it. Calling the Proton word processor basic would be generous, and there are no chat or conferencing apps along with other business-critical applications. The Proton suite is a niche product for those that need encrypted email documents and maybe a VPN. What I would like to see Apple do is something akin to the old Microsoft Home Essentials bundle, but cloud-based. But then again, Apple's iCloud.com website does this already. I would have used iCloud.com while I was still employed if it weren't for those pesky IT people who blocked the site on our systems. However, they never really blocked personal Microsoft OneDrive access, though, as long as you were using the web versions of Microsoft apps. I don't know if this was an oversight on their part or because our organization ran on MS-365. I'm guessing it was an oversight. So no, I don't think Apple will attempt to crack the business market, but hey, I could be wrong, and it wouldn't be the first time.
Stay warm and save every day, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. And we've lowered prices. You can save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas Mini Bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Entertainment news. I was going to use this story in the podcast news section, but decided the entertainment section is a better place for it. Rupert Murdoch's Fox acquires a podcast network of former Fox News stars Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly, and that's the headline from Breitbart.com. Over the past 4 years or so, we've seen many popular and in some cases not so popular conservative political commentators and journalists purge from their mainstream news media employers, only to go on and create successful what are labeled as podcasts. What I hadn't realized is that many of these former media stars, some of which I actually watch, fell under an entity called Red Seat Ventures. Megyn Kelly, Tucker Carlson, Bill O'Reilly, Piers Morgan, and many other so-called independent journalists fall under this Red Seat Ventures umbrella. Last week, it was announced that the Fox Media Group has purchased Red Seat Ventures, and it will operate under Fox's Tubi Media Group. Now, Tubi is an ad-supported streaming service founded in 2014 by two former executives of the AdRise advertisement company. I remember checking Tubi out around that time and experienced problems with its software. Problem so bad that I abandoned Tubi. Fox bought Tubi in 2020 and has put a lot of money into the service by making deals with major content production companies and thankfully improving the app itself. Just this month, Tubi carried the broadcast of the 2025 Super Bowl, and that so far is the service's crowning achievement. What's interesting about this acquisition of Red Seat Ventures is that Kelly, Carlson, and O'Reilly were forced out from Fox, in other words, fired. Will they stay with Red Seat Ventures? And if they do stay, will they still be independent? That is, if they were ever independent. Ms. Kelly, commenting on a tweet on X from Reuters, which proclaimed that her, Carlson, and O'Reilly were, quote, back in the Murdoch fold, unquote, stated, quote, "No, it doesn't. We are 100% independent. Fox bought the company that sells our ads, period," unquote. Yeah, okay. It's a known fact advertisers have leverage over those it chooses to advertise with.
Oh, yes.
Knowing that, I guess you'll start seeing Big Pharma ads now on Red Seat Ventures' stable of former network star shows. For Fox, this acquisition makes good business sense. Let's face it, mainstream news media as well as cable television is dying, with younger folk streaming everything these days, my old fart butt included. Perhaps I'm an outlier here, but judging by my millennial children, none have ever had a cable TV subscription and consume content mainly on their phones, tablets, and computers. If they do consume content on a television, it's via a streaming box or stick. Streaming apps like Tubi are the modern television networks, whether traditional networks like it or not. Makes me wonder what companies like Sony are going to do. You know, Sony was ahead of the game with its Crackle ad-supported streaming service. The company lost interest, sold Crackle off, and the new owner shut it down last year. When Sony owned Crackle, it featured original series complete with pretty big-name stars. I think what Sony was doing was offloading series it had commissioned but couldn't sell to any networks. When this backlog of shows was exhausted, they jettisoned Crackle. Anyway, I don't know what this all means for the stable of former Fox News stars as well as the others. I know I've lost some trust in them, though. Another item of news that could have also been in the podcast news section is that Netflix tried to buy the streaming rights to the Call Her Daddy podcast, which eventually went to Sirius XM. This was reported by podnews.net. This is the first time that I've ever heard about Netflix attempting to buy video rights for a podcast. Is Netflix branching out into a new direction? Well, I think they dodged a bullet here, as the appeal of a show such as Call Her Daddy will eventually lose its appeal. And if rumors are to be believed, this has already started happening.
Uh-oh.
As far as entertainment in this household, the final episodes of the Karate Kid movie franchise-based Cobra Kai were released on Netflix last week. My lovely wife and I binge-watched them over 2 days last week and were sad to see the show go. Though neither of us were fans of the Karate Kid movies, the show was very well written and acted. It originally debuted on the now-defunct YouTube Red service before being picked up by Netflix. I still feel that the first two seasons, which aired on YouTube Red, were the show's best. Netflix poured some cash into the show, which lifted up the production values, but Cobra Kai lost something in the process, starting with the fourth season, in my opinion. Other than that, we're watching Dexter, Original Sin, and Severance. Podcast news. Nothing much to report this week. I reported on the biggest podcast-related stories in the entertainment section. I did that because the podcasts referenced in those stories aren't really true podcasts. A few of them started out as such, but morphed into shows by adding a video component, which became the main source of consumption and monetization for them. Megyn Kelly and Call Her Daddy started as audio-only podcasts, but Tucker Carlson, Piers Morgan, and Bill O'Reilly shows were always video-first. I'm of the opinion that video-first podcasts aren't really podcasts at all. And I'm not alone in that opinion, as the Podfather himself Adam Curry agrees with me.
Yes.
The thing that makes audio-only podcasts special is the one-on-one relationship between the host and the listener that's formed. The host is speaking to you, not at some camera. Also, I believe information is imparted better by audio only, without the distraction of video. The platforms that host these shows, like YouTube and Spotify, also have too much control over the host's content. Because of the lure of fortune, and if the host is good-looking enough, fame, many audio-only podcast hosts and just-starting-out podcasters are being drawn to the video format. Well, I have neither the time or looks to attempt hosting a video segment of the OFNT podcast. Plus, I value what privacy I still have. My next objective for this podcast is to convert it into a value-for-value show as opposed to ads being run for monetization purposes. The most money I made podcasting was a political-themed show which had no ads. Instead, I had a steady stream of donations that dwarfed what I'm making from ads on this podcast. Well, I stopped doing that political podcast because it wasn't good for my mental or physical well-being. Who knows? Maybe one day I'll start it up once again. According to RainNews.com, the Podcast Academy has announced the nominees for the 5th Annual Ambies Awards. And no, the OFNT podcast isn't amongst those nominees.
No!
Besides not being considered big enough for an Ambie nomination, you have to pay money for that nomination. While perusing the list of nominees, I see the same corporate and public radio-sponsored shows represented, along with a sprinkling of new ones. Even the independent podcast nominations category is filled with NPR and corporate-backed podcasts. I assume this is because really independent podcasts which I define as having no corporate or public media connections, aren't paying for a nomination, nor is anyone other than them paying for a nomination for them. The first AMBY Award show did have some of the OG independent podcasters as nominees, but none of them won. When the Podcast Academy was formed, a couple of the trailblazing old podcasters were on its board of directors. They were all gone by the third year of the Academy's existence. They've all been replaced by corporate representation. I've managed to watch three of the four AMBY's award shows. The first one was actually broadcast on television, while subsequent shows have been streamed on YouTube and now Twitch. I watched the inaugural award show and was not impressed with the hosts at all. The second one I watched had a professional comedian who did a decent job, but surprisingly, the last award show I watched, and I don't remember what year it was hosted by a drag queen who, in my opinion, was the best host the AMBY's ever had. This year, the AMBY's will be streamed on Twitch on March 31st. Being that my lovely wife will be away, I'll probably wind up watching it. No podcasts that I listen to have mentioned the AMBY's. I guess that's because most are independent podcasts, and both the Podcast Academy and their AMBY Awards mean nothing to them. What surprises me the most is that the Podcast Academy still exists. The music is playing and my flappers are tired, which all contributes to the ending of this episode of the OFNT podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed making it for you. If you like what you heard, you can make a donation using the link in the show notes. Any and all donations will be appreciated. You can always reach me at ofntpodcast@gmail.com, and that's only if you're so inclined. I'd enjoy hearing from you. I really would. Remember, don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. Now I've run out of clever things to say here, so just get off my lawn, will ya? Stay skeptical. I'm out. See ya. Don't.